Hi, this is John Zappas from the Paranormal Research Center of New England. I hope you guys enjoy listening to Ghostly Talk. These guys are great. Have a lot of fun with them doing their show. And feel free to contact them if you ever need anything. And feel free to contact me if you ever need anything. Be willing to share experiences and talk about things. And like I said, listen to my buddies here at Ghostly Talk.
Hello, this is 911. What is your emergency?
Hello, 911. You got to help me. There's a ghost in my trailer.
Excuse me, ma'am?
There's a ghost in my trailer. He's a flipping and a flopping and a flying all over.
Ma'am, please calm down. Ghosts do not haunt mobile homes.
Yes, they do. I saw it on hard copy.
Okay, what is the ghost doing?
He turned the lights on and off, and then he knocked on the door.
Are you sure it's not the power company?
No, he's right here on the couch eating Cheetos.
Okay, what does the ghost look like?
He's invisible. I can only see the orange stuff around his fingers and his mouth.
Sound familiar? This scenario happens every day at trailer parks across America. Experts estimate that one out of every six mobile homes is haunted by a ghost or perhaps a possum. You could be next. Here are some telltale signs. A can of skull mysteriously floats through the air. Blood drips out of your simulated wood paneling. The room is spinning and you're not even drunk yet. If you think your trailer may have an unwanted guest, please call Trailer Exterminators. We specialize in mobile home ghost removal as well as the extermination of aliens, secret government bugs, and in-laws. Don't call 911. Call us now.
Trailer Exterminators, may I help you?
Yeah, the government has built a tiny robotic inchworm that has infiltrated my compound and attempted to steal my secret car's poison recipe.
Don't worry, sir. We'll be right over.
I'll be hurry, because they're about to unleash a giant bat.
Don't delay. Call now. Double Y Vicky.
At www.missourighost.net, you are listening to Ghostly Talk.
Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not an option. Go home and die.
We're back.
All right.
This is like getting really hectic here. Man.
I know we were doing like six things all at the same time.
Yeah, trying to keep it together and like, okay, we only have like 10 seconds. Hurry up, guys. Go. All right, okay.
Start now. We will. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And this is Ghostly Talk. We are on live. Well, right now it is from 6 to 9 p.m. Sunday nights. Right now we're talking to Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Again, Rosemary, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate
it. Pleasure.
It's totally cool to talk to you. Learning a whole lot. Now, Doug, you didn't say too much the first half hour.
I was looking for this article, which it turns out Havoc had linked up on our homepage.
And you were everywhere but our homepage.
Right, I went everywhere but. But I found this article about a fellow in Des Moines, Iowa. And the article came out within the past week, so this happened recently.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten fired for seeing a ghost. Pretty much.
Okay.
He was working. He was a rent-a-cop kind of thing for a neighborhood.
He was a security guard.
Oh, thank you. Yes, he was a security guard for a community.
Yeah.
And it was his first day, evidently. I don't remember.
He'd been working there for 5 weeks.
Oh, 5 weeks. So okay, then he had been
still fairly new.
Fairly new. He calls over, there's this guy, he sees this guy, like, lurking, so he calls over his supervisor and another security guard, and they didn't see this fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Only the one person did.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, that's okay, that's all right.
Well, as I actually read the article, too,
yeah.
If I remember correctly, he called his boss over, and somebody else, another security guard.
A supervisor
and said, you see that guy out there? And they're like, we don't see anybody. And he's like, there's someone right there. And they're like, we don't see anybody. You're seeing things. He's like, no, I see there's someone right there, right? Mm-hmm. So they came upon the conclusion that it had to have been some type of spirit or something like that.
Right. So what they did, they fired him. They fired him that day that he saw that.
What ground could you fire someone on that for? Mental issues?
It said in the article, it wasn't insubordination, but it was something like that.
it was something they said it was some sort of misconduct.
Oh, misconduct.
Okay.
So they fired him.
How do you misconduct yourself by seeing a ghost?
Good question.
I mean, if you were like smashing one of the work computers while you were seeing the ghost, I can understand that.
if you were
like beating up a coworker while you saw the ghost, I can understand that. But if you just saw a ghost,
is that misconduct?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, did they take this as a sign of some sort of instability, or
they didn't say in the article?
It doesn't seem to me there's very clear grounds there.
I didn't see clear grounds, but they did. So he went to apply for unemployment, right? The whole point of the article is that he went to apply for unemployment, and the company turned him down and said, "No, we're not going to pay unemployment, or you know, you can't."
You got fired for misconduct, so yeah. we can't pay you unemployment based on that.
So it went to either a judge or an arbitrator. I don't know how it works, but it went to an authority, and it was ruled that the firing was upheld, so he was still fired, right? But that they did have to pay the unemployment part.
What do you think about that, Rosemary? We're just curious.
For seeing a ghost.
Well, if it is what they say it is, and there isn't some sort of other thing going on, some other reason they were looking for an excuse, it stinks.
I agree.
Yeah, it's garbage. It's total garbage, I think.
I was
shocked. To label it misconduct.
Right.
I mean, I would have been more comfortable with it if I think they said, okay, look, this guy is stressed too much. He's starting to see stuff. Maybe put him on a stress leave or something like that. Maybe not fire him necessarily, but put him on a stress leave. Take him to the company shrink. Go through his head a little bit and see what may be the problem. Whether there is one or not, that's not the point. But, like, let's handle this a certain way. Not just can the guy for misconduct so he cannot file for unemployment and pay his bills, God forbid.
Right.
I mean,
while he's looking for a new job.
Yeah. I mean, now, we don't know all the details, though. This is just a story.
We only know what was in the article.
Yeah. The guy could have been, he could have been had a crack pipe hanging out of his mouth when he did this, and the guy's caught him with it. We don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
It was working,
Yeah. Well, I would question it regardless, but as far as the black and the white of it goes here, it seems like it stinks. I agree with you, Rosemary. I think that totally stinks, how they could treat someone like that.
The thing is that even if it wound up just being an excuse, like the straw that broke the camel's back or, there were other things going on, using that as the reason to get rid of him it only discourages people from talking about their paranormal experiences. When people see bad things happen to others because they speak up about something paranormal, then it just keeps the whole thing under a lid. It keeps everything paranormal under a lid. We don't talk about it. We don't want to go there. We don't want to admit to it. And we shortchange ourselves by doing that.
It's similar, it seems to me, because there is this degree of persecution we both know about for people that have had experiences with whatever you want to call it, anything, any type of thing paranormal. And that's the point that you're making there, right there.
It
discourages people.
It flies in the face of what I've seen happening in general. I mean, in general, I see, the History Channel has all kinds of specials, and the Sci-Fi Channel has Ghost Hunters, and, we have Ghostly Talk, and the books. I mean, I went to the bookstore last month in Indiana, and there was just like, a whole section of ghost and paranormal books. And so I've seen tons of examples where the welcoming of this topic is increasing, and people are getting more and more interested in it, and then you get an article like that.
Well, the thing that that makes me even more confused about it is that we've seen example after example also, and I'm sure you've seen this also, Rosemary, of videos. Well, here, a security guard, and this is what has actually been said, the one apparition they caught that was like actually floating in a junkyard.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
Man, this is a really creepy-looking piece of video we saw. And the security guard was the one who saw it on the video and pointed it out and said, hey, what's that? And they were recording everything, so they looked it back, and that's where they got this piece of footage. That's another example, the same job role, it seems. Okay, there's a security guard here working. He sees this thing on video. I don't think
he got fired, though.
He didn't get fired. That's the thing. There's a difference, though. You have some evidence to back it up, though, too.
Well, that's
true. This guy is just like, I see a ghost. And they're like, well, I see someone out there. And they're like, we don't see anything. You're losing your mind. You're fired. Go away. I mean, I don't know what the difference may be with that, but there's still two people seeing things. Who knows what it may have been? I mean, it's like you said, it slaps everything in the face itself,
right,
as far as everything we've talked about thus
far. That was a very disconcerting article to me.
Completely.
I was really upset by that.
Very curious why the firing was upheld, because just being an apparition sounds like a pretty flimsy reason for firing someone that doesn't sound legitimate.
I think in this
day. That's why I'm wondering what's really going on there.
Well, it may, yeah, and that's what I said before. We should question a lot more things about the article also because, like you said, Rosemary, it could have been the straw that broke the camel's back. This guy may have been messing off really bad for a couple of weeks there. And then finally, you know, this situation occurs, and they're like, look, this guy has got to go. He's been coming in late every day. He's been doing this and doing this. That could have been the real reason. Who knows? But they could have stated that.
I don't know. I'd like to give him a little bit of credit, though. I mean, it was a new job.
Yeah.
You know, and theoretically, he would have been excited about having been hired, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to knock the guy or anything like that, but I'm just, you know, Rosemary made a good point, though. There could have been
other factors that didn't make it into the article.
There could have been other things going on. He could have been sleeping on the job. Who knows? I mean, there could have been all kinds of things going on.
Or, you know, could have been something going on in the company, too, and a decision to down, you know, let go of people or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it just strikes me that if you do want to reduce your workforce, there are other ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
There's other ways to
I
do
think
it.
So
and you
too.
Can pay unemployment.
And not hang it on, you know, a poor ghost.
Yeah.
You know.
It's the ghost's fault.
The ghost's fault for getting this guy fired. Well, thank you for indulging me in that discussion because I did want to talk about it because it did upset me. And I see, you know, now I see a lot more points of view. And
well, the big thing, like the belly of it really is just like Rosemary said, though, too. It just keeps people from talking about this stuff more.
And I don't like
it
that.
It scares people. They're like, wait, let's just set the stakes up and start burning people. I mean, why not? I mean, really, that's similar to what happened back then.
You saw a ghost? Aha!
Well, you're a witch. You're fired.
Ghost corral,
and you get no benefits either. You get no unemployment benefits either. I mean, what's the difference, really? It's persecution all the same, in my opinion. Rosemary.
Yes.
Thank you, like Doug said, for indulging us in that. We were really curious about that. I read that article, too. I saw the headline. I'm like, what? No, this can't be right. This has got to be a joke or something like that. Because I read right through that article just like you did, Doug. And it's an interesting to think about, more or less.
It upsets me, too. Right here.
We were talking about dreams before we left, Rosemary.
Right.
We were talking about visitations and dreams. Your title is, when you work working with dreams, I'm trying to get this correct and get the correct verbiage for you. You actually work with people who dream and stuff like that. You said this is what got you into studying the paranormal, more or less, right?
Right. I do what's called lay dream work facilitation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a licensed psychologist. I'm not a shrink. I don't do therapy, but I do help people understand their dreams, and it's called lay dream work.
Okay.
Non-professional dream people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it for years with professionals and other lay dream work facilitators for groups and individuals. I think it's very important for us to understand our dreams because they speak to us in symbols which contain a lot more information than language does, than spoken language or written language.
Mm-hmm.
And they also penetrate the multiverse. They are one of our best vehicles for having otherworldly experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is possible to train your dreaming mind to have more experiences. You can incubate, you can program, you can experiment with dreams and make them more proactive rather than reactive.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing, I've talked to a few people and Amber Rose said this the other day. She's like, I really wish I would have written down things that I dreamed like 4 years ago. Because she's like, I remember them vaguely now as they're happening to me. She's like, these things actually, they were premonitions. And she's like, I really wish I would have sat down and wrote these things down in detail so I'd have something to verify this stuff with. She, you know, and she's like, I obviously feel something. I feel something happening here, but I don't have anything to really verify it and cross-check it with. And you were talking
it
about...
It's important.
Yeah, it's very important to have that.
Write it down.
Yeah.
If you do forget them, now, certain exceptions are these encounter dreams, like dreams of the dead, that are so vivid
mm-hmm.
and so electrifying that years later you're going to remember every detail.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, we forget our dreams as soon as we wake up unless we record them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kept a dream journal for, you know, most of my life.
Wow.
It's very interesting to go back through them, and you can see patterns and themes crop up. It is a way to identify precognitive things, because all of us have precognitive elements to our dreams. We have what I call little precognitions. You know, we're not going to dream about big disasters and big events so much, but maybe things that might pertain more closer to home, to our
mm-hmm.
personal sphere.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems that dreams, they really tell you what you're really thinking about a lot, too, I've noticed. Because we've talked about dreams numerous times on the show, and I know there's one of the things I thought about, and I think we discussed it together. This is back before we ever, like, even thought about having people come on the show and stuff like that. But one of the things I remember talking with Doug about was, you know, I have these dreams sometimes where insignificant people in my life, and I don't mean insignificant as in I don't like them or they're bad people or something like that, but people that really don't have a lot of bearing in my life, like minor players in my life, like obviously like my sister, she's a major player in my life. Doug's a major player in my life. Will's a major player in my life. But someone that I, like, you know, I may have worked with like 3 or 4 years ago, it seems that they don't really have a lot of impact on me. But for some reason, they'll pop up in my dreams, and they'll be like a very, like for that particular dream or that night I'm sleeping or whatever, they'll be the focal point of this dream. They'll be like the big part, and they'll be the major player in my dream. And that never really made too much sense to me. I mean, do you have any idea? Have you ever experienced this before?
Oh, all the time, and there are a number of ways that you can tackle that. The dreamer really is the only person who can truly interpret a dream, but you can get lots of help and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Like some groups and talking about it that can give you that aha. People often represent pieces of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Even people that are insignificant in our lives, there might be something of us in them. And especially if they come back onto a dream, into a dream as a central character.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would do is I would do some free association with what am I seeing of me in this person?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that they can link us to is a period in time. Especially if we had dealings with a person some years ago and now they are truly minor players because they've receded
mm-hmm.
from life. So was there something going on in that period of time where that person was more prominent that pertains to something going on in my life right now?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's an emotional link. So I would look at what are my emotions surrounding this person, when they were more important as opposed to now, or just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's the emotion that will take us into the real meaning of the dream, because dreams are highly emotional in content.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic meaning of or purpose of a dream, I think, is to reflect how we think we're doing in life, how we feel we're doing in life. Not necessarily how we're doing in life,
mm-hmm.
but how we feel we're doing in life. Because a lot of dreams are anxiety dreams. And we have anxieties about ourselves and our performance and what other people think of us that often have no real basis in reality. We're just, you know, not giving ourselves enough credit.
Mm-hmm.
So the dream tells us how we feel about what's happening to us in life.
Mm.
And I think if you start with that perspective, then a lot of the dream can start to unravel and what its message is.
Mm. And it's more of an emotional thing. That's the idea.
Dreams are highly emotional in content. They reflect our current feelings, our hopes, ambitions, our fears, our repressed feelings. And it's how we're emotionally reacting to us and to things that are happening to us. That's a core meaning to many dreams.
And as we know,
emotional reaction.
Well, as we know too, dreams are never black and white either. They're like we were talking about before. This is where I'm kind of bringing them both together, thinking about this. emotions are obviously something that you cannot really say, well, this is how I'm going to feel today. No, you're not going to feel that way today. You don't know how you're going to feel because there's no set plan. There's no black and white. There's a lot of gray areas there. That's how I've always approached it, Rosemary, until you said this, is, you know, when I have a dream about somebody, and somebody is a major, like I was saying, like a major character in that dream, who's very, very minor in real life when I'm awake, I'm like, okay, this makes no sense. I'm trying to find the black and white. Like, what is this? This person is not, they don't belong in my life. I don't understand this. But there could have been, like you said, there's this emotional value tied to that where, you know, like I mentioned, coworker. I actually had a coworker that, you know, I worked with him. I talked to him every once in a while. And they, you know, they were just somebody I worked with for a little while. It wasn't a big deal. But then all of a sudden I had this dream a couple years later that's just absolutely vivid. This person is like right there the whole time, major character. Maybe there was some emotional thing going on at that time where I could try to tie them together somehow to understand what happened that night. That's what I'm thinking now, more or less.
Right. Rather than perhaps a characteristic or a behavior pattern or an attribute about this person that's applying, it could be, I would look for an emotional syndrome, like was there a situation pertaining to you at that particular time that this person was in your life that the same emotions are being raised in a situation now. And, for example, a dream might just be bringing to our attention that we're in some sort of emotional state that needs to be resolved. Dreams are about restoring equilibrium in life. They show us how we're out of balance, and they also give us ideas for how to get ourselves back in balance. They're about maintaining harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even when we get unpleasant dreams or nightmares, there's still, when you strip away the fear and anxiety components of them, there's very useful, valuable information in those dreams that have to do with restoring harmony and equilibrium in life. So even a nightmare has a great deal of helpful information. I don't think that we're ever... dreams give us what we can handle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are cases, of course, where you really do need professional help. If you've got severe psychological stress, you've been through very traumatic situations where you might have post-traumatic stress syndrome going on, where you're dealing with some truly scary, nightmarish contents to your dreams, then yes, you need to take them into a therapy situation.
A good example I like to throw out to people, this is really funny too, I think I may have mentioned it before, and Doug, you verify this for me. I used to be a bartender back in the day, Rosemary, and one night we just had a rough night. It was just very busy. We worked like straight for like 6 hours, just breaking our backs, right? And I get home really late, like 3-4 in the morning, and I'm exhausted, and I start to fall asleep, right? And I don't know if this was necessarily like, you know, in my, you know, the deep sleep state. I was just kind of falling. What's the term for that, Doug or Rosemary? There's a term for that.
Well, it was the hypnagogic state, and then after that,
hypnagogic is where you're going into sleep, and that's that twilight kind of in between.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What happened during the hypnagogic state, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
I started seeing myself behind the bar again, and the people just wouldn't stop coming. I kept throwing them drinks. Another drink, and they kept coming, and they would not stop coming, to the point where it drove me nearly insane, it felt, until I finally just popped myself out, woke up quick, and like I was panicking, Rosemary. I was like, oh my God, wait, whoa, I'm in bed, it's all over, it's there's nothing wrong here, everything's fine, I'm not working anymore, relax, go to sleep.
And you didn't get paid for all that.
I didn't get paid for that either. Yeah, that was the worst part of the whole thing. Yeah.
I would have sent him a bill for overtime.
Yeah.
But no, I felt like, you know, like you were saying, post-traumatic stress disorder. It was a stressful night. It was a really stressful, and I hate people, by the way, too. So I had to like deal with all these drunk morons for 6 hours. I could have punched them all in the jaw as they walked up, and it would have been all the same to me. So that coupled with the fact, you know, that I couldn't, it would not stop. It was very stressful. And I felt it as I was going into this hypnagogic state. It felt that I literally woke up in a panic. Like, oh my God, wait, I'm in bed. What are you doing? Relax. Is that an example that you were talking about? I'm just curious.
Well, it wouldn't be an example of what I would call the post-traumatic stress, you know, the severe situations that would require, you know, thorough professional help. Mm-hmm. It falls more into the class of everyday anxiety kinds of dreams. And that hypnagogic state tends to generate images that are conducive to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of jumbled, fleeting images. There's often a sense of tension and pressure. And it would be not unusual to have sort of a end of the day, oh my God, I'm stressed out kind of dreaming experience in mm-hmm. that state.
When there's, well, there's all, go ahead, Doug.
Well, I was going to actually change the subject just a little bit
mm-hmm.
because what brings you to the Mothman Festival every year?
Yes, for the Mothman, for everybody out there who may not know what Mothman is, it's a creature who showed up in West Virginia in the 1960s, 1966 and into 67,
mm-hmm.
in a rash of sightings, sort of like a UFO flap. And it was a humanoid dark creature with red eyes and these bat-like wings, and there was a whole host of other phenomena that went on with that, UFO sightings, poltergeists, men in black, just a lot of high strangeness. Mm. And Mothman is still seen today, but the sightings ended very suddenly, and a bridge collapsed in which a lot of people died. Some people connect the bridge collapse to the whole syndrome of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a festival now every year to commemorate these activities and
yeah.
explore the mystery of Mothman. Well, Mothman falls in my purview of all the things that I study. I look for the interconnections, and all of these phenomena, these paranormal phenomena, they're all interconnected. Angels are connected. Vampires are connected. There are threads that hook everything together, and that's what I'm interested in exploring. So my interest is how does Mothman relate to other kinds of phenomena that we experience?
Mm-hmm.
In these gray areas where you have no black and white definition. Was Mothman a supernatural creature? Was it a vampire? Was it a projection of consciousness? Was it a demon? We could apply a lot of labels to Mothman, and they are probably all true in some way, but mm-hmm. no one label is any better than the other in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my own feeling about Mothman is that Mothman may be a creature in its own right, in its own slice of the multiverse. It feels more to me like a projection of some sort of thought form creation
mm-hmm.
that arose and came through a portal. Now, there were some perhaps geophysical properties involved. There was a TNT plant, which is now out of production, where toxic chemicals are in the earth, and there could be some geomagnetic properties in that part of West Virginia. I think there are certain parts of the country that are more prone to high strangeness than others because of geophysical properties.
Mm-hmm.
And something could have been going on that enabled a creature like Mothman to arise and project itself into our reality. And create havoc for a while, and just as suddenly as it appeared, it vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows why it ever showed up in the first place and why it ever really disappeared.
Well, we've been there twice now.
Unless you watch the movie.
Well, yeah.
And then you're like, okay, that's lame.
The movie was not very good. If you knew nothing about Mothman, after watching the movie, you knew less. It didn't really explain what Mothman was.
No, it didn't.
Or any, really, of the terrific supernatural folklore that happened around that. Keel's book is brilliant, and the movie really didn't do justice to it.
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
It did. I think the one redeeming quality it did have is that it did bring a lot of attention to the Mothman in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. So that's the reason there's a lot of people show up for this thing every year, and it seems like the attendance gets bigger and bigger every year. We've been there two years in a row now.
Right.
We were there in the third, and we were obviously there for the fourth annual, along with you, Rosemary. So a lot of people show up.
She was at the third one, too.
You were at the third one also?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my second time. Now, next year, if anyone's interested in Mothman, you want to mark your calendar now for the middle of September, because not only is it going to be the fifth a festival. It's going to be the 40th anniversary of Mothman.
Oh, man.
So Jeff Wamsley is planning some bigger activities and expanding it to a two-day thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a terrific festival.
Yeah, Jeff does a great job. Every year, he's done a great job. Last year was amazing. This year was even more amazing.
Do you stay? Did you ever get to stay? Because you've been there 3 years, right? Did you ever stay at the Low Hotel?
Yes, that's where I do stay, and it's haunted. And in fact, I interviewed on this last trip. I interviewed the owners, and I'm preparing an article for Fate Magazine on the hauntings of the Low. I've not experienced any phenomena there myself in my two visits. This year they gave me the Keel room, the room that John Keel had occupied the two times that he came to the festival.
Oh, cool.
And Tim Frick, who is one of the regulars there with his brother John, they create the Mothman creature that flies over the hayride, the haunted
mm-hmm.
hayride at night. Tim had captured some interesting phenomena in the Keel room, what appears to be like a wisp of ectoplasm, and it's around the mirror in the room, it's an interesting photograph. But alas, I was not haunted myself.
Doesn't that go figure?
It's still
you know,
cool.
But that's what happens.
Well, you know, you go looking for it,
and
usually
yeah.
you're not going to find it. But Mothman has not seemed to have duplicated itself elsewhere, but there are other sightings of similar kinds of creatures, you know, dark humanoid creatures with these big wings. I found some going back into the early 1800s, but they tended to be one-off kind of sightings, not syndromes that lasted over a period of time and involved a lot of people. And a lot of other phenomena. There was a whole syndrome of things that went on. And the Men in Black, especially, and UFO activity. And something was going on. There was some sort of, I would say, multiverse rip where a lot of things poured through into this area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a Twilight Zone episode where something opens up and then it closes.
Mm-hmm. As fast as it can.
I don't really know why either one of those happens. I really do suspect, however, that geophysical properties play a very important role in the manifestation of phenomena, including hauntings. There are certain areas of the country that, for example, West Virginia going into Pennsylvania, New Jersey, a lot of high strangeness. There may be some something in the soil. There's certainly high levels of radon in some of those parts, and these may have a factor in whether or not these portals open up, the geophysical properties themselves.
Mm. It's an interesting way to look at it, too.
Well, and we had always thought, you know, because the Ohio State Reformatory,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all the silicon in the area,
and the sand and
the
stones
mm-hmm.
and whatnot.
And
that's another good example.
Gets put in the stones, and then that's a great conductor of energy.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't we take another quick break?
All right.
Okay. Rosemary, hang tight. So we have more to talk about, too. We haven't even touched upon the thing we were planning on talking about for the majority of this conversation, I thought, tonight. But that's okay.
Right. Well, Rosemary's so prolific.
Yeah.
And you have so many fascinating offshoots, you know, from dreams to Mothman and creatures and the multiverse to vampires.
Yeah.
Vampires, yes. One of my favorite topics.
Well,
let's take a break, and we'll talk
about
that.
Vampires.
Yeah, let's talk about that after the break, then.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
Ghostly Talk with the hosts of Ghostbusting, Scott L. and Doug.
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm trying to talk to somebody. My husband is about 96 years old.
Uh-huh.
And when he died, I plan to bring him down there to y'all.
Uh-huh.
And we just want to make sure that his casket is comfortable. And we want to bring him down there and let him try out some caskets and see which one that'll look nice on him.
Okay, you all just want to come in and look at them?
I know I want him to. He wants to lay in them and see which one feels the best to him, because he's going to be down there for a long time.
Okay, now who am I speaking with?
Bernice Williams.
Miss Williams?
Yes.
Okay, he can't lay in them, Miss Williams, but we can let him look at them.
Well, why can't he lay in them? Because, see, he got to get something that he's comfortable with. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks? You think he'll die in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I really think so. And he wants to come down there and lay in some caskets and stuff. And, you know, I think it'd be nice. I'm just trying to fulfill his wishes.
Okay, well, if you want to come down and look at some, and maybe he can put his hand on them and feel them and see what they feel
like. Well, what they feel like?
Well, most of them have springs on them, normally like a mattress.
No, I don't want them to bounce up out of there, because, see, when them aunts come here from out of town and they get the rack in that casket and he bounce up out of there,
mm-hmm.
Oh, no, you're going to run folks out of the church.
Well, what church are you going to?
Well, we don't know, because he in between churches right now. He in between New Hope and New Pilgrim. And we don't know where we're going to have the funeral yet.
Oh, okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
But do y'all do flowers?
Yes, ma'am. We don't do them, but we can order them for you.
Well, we want to put the family flower in the casket. Because
on the inside of the casket?
Yes. It don't make no sense for the flower to be on the outside, and he can't smell them.
Well, you know, you can't put them on the inside of the casket. You could take a couple of them off and put in there.
We want to put all of them in there. If you take all of them off and put them in the bottom.
Well, if that's what you want to do, you can do that.
And what else do y'all put in the casket?
Nothing, just...
Because he got a little radio that he listened to all the time. Can you put it on the gospel station and cut it on before they bury him, where he can have his gospel music and things, and put like a pitcher of water in there and some cups?
Yes, ma'am. You can put that in there if you want to.
And he loved them little Debbie brownies with the peanuts on the top. Put some of them in there. Because we just want him to be comfortable.
Do you think he's going to wake up and eat that stuff?
Well, you know, he said that when he dead and things, he, I don't know, hell. Don't start me to lie.
Okay.
I just want to put a lot of stuff in there just in case he do. Do any of them ever wake up?
No, ma'am, they don't wake up.
Well, you won't know if they're out there on the ship. Well, listen, do y'all go back and dig them up and check on them and make sure they're all intact and stuff?
No, ma'am.
Well, who y'all got down there this week?
About 9 people.
Because, see, we want to look at some funerals and see how y'all work. What's the next funeral y'all having?
Wednesday.
And who is that?
Miss Crenshaw.
Lord, they didn't even tell me Miss Crenshaw is that. Is this the one from our new pilgrim?
No, it's not.
Oh, which Crenshaw was there?
From Bethel Baptist.
Oh, you talking about, oh, Lord Jesus. What happened to her?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought there was the other Miss Crenshaw. I doubt it, but I ain't like her anyway, because she keep up so much mess in the church. Uh-huh. Okay, then, we're going to come down there, and y'all going to let him lay in the casket.
Yeah, you can put him in there.
Well, thank you. What's your name, sugar?
Ida.
Uh-huh. Okay, Ida.
All right.
Oh, bye-bye.
I'm going over the fence, and I'm not coming back till I find a dead body.
Good break. That was a long break, actually.
Yeah, well, I needed it. I actually like went and laid down for a couple of minutes. I just My brain hurt. I'm like, oh god. So I went and had another one of those What do they call them? What was the name of it again?
A hypnagogic.
I went and had another hypnagogic episode in my bedroom for a few minutes.
Wow, that was quick.
Mothman there.
Yeah. We chilled for a minute. We had a smoke, and I came back out here.
Yeah. Well, I chatted with Rosemary.
Did you?
Yeah.
What'd you guys chat about?
Well, we talked about the Mothman Festival.
Oh,
yeah.
That was a great time. We had a ball. I loved it this year. We got to meet so many great people, and obviously it's the reason we have Rosemary Ellen Guiley on the show tonight. We got to hang out with Rosemary. Now, there's one thing we haven't covered yet.
Well, first of all, go ahead. Yeah, what's your website?
Yeah.
It's www.visionaryliving.com, and I have a brand new look. Vince Wilson, who's the president of the Maryland Paranormal Investigators Coalition, has designed me a smashing paranormal website, and I'm putting up new content, and going to be updating it regularly, so cool. I invite people to drop by. I've got articles posted on a lot of the topics that we've been talking about tonight, and even more. They're the ones that are most important to me in my research, the dreams, angels, demons, fairies, vampires, werewolves, ghosts and hauntings, all the good stuff.
And you've written 2.4 million books.
Yeah, something like that.
I kind of spawn while I'm sleeping. What are some of the books that you've written?
Other than the topics that I've just mentioned, I've also covered reincarnation, intuition, soulmates, mysterious places, prayer and healing, saints, mysticism.
Well, we can put that probably under the heading of everything and then some. It sounds like you covered just about everything, it sounds like, Rosemary.
Well, actually, I probably have written at least something on just about every topic in the paranormal and spiritual. Some of my encyclopedias, like one that I did, which was Mystical and Paranormal Phenomena, I cover things like Men in Black and UFOs, near-death experience, and things that I haven't done books on, particular topics, but I've written about them, and I also write a lot for Fate magazine as consulting editor.
Great magazine.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it's been a very useful, broad education in things, because I think it's very important to see the big picture, and you have to look at the light side and the dark side. You can't limit yourself, my feeling is, one or the other. I don't advocate, you know, I'm not telling people, well, you have to go and get immersed in sorcery or demonology or something like that. But I think if you're going to be involved in the paranormal, it's a good idea to have a well-rounded education and to at least have some knowledge of what all is out there, because all this stuff is interconnected. You can't see just one little piece of the pie. You're going to run into all these other pieces at some point.
Well, you're preaching to the choir on that one. Because that's, I mean, you should be a paranormal internet talk show host, because that's pretty much what you do when we found out when you do this kind of thing. You immerse yourself in everything. And what you said actually is like probably what it's what I've been kind of like living by for the last 3-4 years is that all this stuff is related in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form. There's some type of glue out there that relates all these things together, puts it all together into one big ball of wax. And I think that's what the true mystery is, because it isn't, like you said, black and white. It there's these gray areas, and that's where the mystery lies, I think. That's really where it's all at. And that's really what I explore now with this show and all these things and try to find how these things interrelate with one another. It's an amazing idea, and it's what I know I've learned.
Right.
Well, I think the more these things are discussed and studied and debated and read about, the better it is for our understanding of consciousness
mm-hmm.
and what consciousness is and where it goes and what it interacts with and also just what are our ideas about reality and realities.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the only game in town, and there are other games that are participating in ours.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, we might be participating in other people's slice of the multiverse in ways that we can't even begin to comprehend. What if we haunt other people's universes? And when they have an experience of us, they're scared out of their wits.
Yeah. I've often thought about that, too. I know Doug, we discussed
it. Oh, yeah.
Maybe we're the ghosts, for all we know. Maybe we are the true ghost, and there's these things that we see going, oh, my God. And on their side, they're going, hey, what the heck is that?
Well, that's like, yeah, even in religious teachings, when you pass on, you're going home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so maybe we're just away for
yeah.
a bit.
We're on a break.
And, yeah, and we'll be home.
We're on a metaphysical smoke break, as they say. That's where we're at right
in
now.
In somebody's universe yeah. out there, we are the phantoms. We're mm-hmm. a phantom world,
mm-hmm.
and someone may have just as much trouble trying to understand what we're all about as we are when we get glimpses of other realities.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting. I mean, even in this plane of existence, I think that occurs too. What I like to think about is, you see the little ant hills. Like if you're walking down the street, you see the little ant hills mm-hmm. like in the cracks of the cement and stuff like that. You know how easy it is to play God in a situation like that, because I mean they're
so mean.
It's
yeah,
horribly mean.
They work tirelessly for.
They spend hours and days building these
yeah.
things, and that's they have. This is their world. This is what they do. And then all of a sudden, here comes this big gigantic foot. It just goes, and I mean it's really we're completely different to them. I mean there's their idea of reality, the ants. And our idea of reality, what their whole world is, this fortress they've built out of sticks and pieces of paper and glass. I mean, I've seen these things before, and more or less dirt, too. That's their life. That is, like, their work. And we look down on it and go, geez, that's just a little anthill. There's nothing really to that. Nothing to that. I mean, just a little hill, big deal, right? So we kind of, even in this plane of reality as we know it, there is that kind of looking in on something else and going, well, that's pretty insignificant compared to my big, beautiful humanoid self, right? There is this idea that you look down at that hill and see that.
So there's a huge difference in perspective.
Yeah, huge
yeah.
difference. Maybe, and like Rosemary said, we aren't the only game in town. There could be another reality that looks down on us like that, too, going, that blue and green thing floating around there in space, and there's nothing to that. They can whip it out of it, knock it with their hand out of the way if they really wanted to. It could be like that. It's a scary thought, I guess, but
yeah.
at the same time, it's a very real thought, I think, too.
I think the more we acknowledge even just the possibility of these pieces of the multiverse and our ability to experience them, the more that's going to open us up on a collective level to have experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That window is going to open more and more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important.
Well, I notice if you just start paying attention to the little things, you pay attention to things that other people would think of as, oh, that's a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, you start noticing that, every day there's like 10 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's something. So you pay attention to these little things. If you open your mind enough to acknowledge them, even if you just acknowledge them for a second and then, write them in chalk and, in the back of your brain and,
mm-hmm.
and until the chalkboard's full and then erase it and start over,
mm-hmm.
you you really are changing your perspective a little bit, mm-hmm. and you start thinking, wow, maybe there is something
mm-hmm.
out there doing this. These coincidences are just too coincidental to be, you know, or too numerous to mention. And then, if you just could change your perspective just a little bit, just for a brief moment,
mm-hmm.
and accept that, you know, like it is here, it is elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
it just, you know, in different dimensions, slightly different here and there,
mm-hmm.
and, ow, that hurts your brain to think of it, but it could happen, and you could start noticing. You could start noticing things that are related to that phenomena.
Mm. And it's an interesting way to think. It's really, that's what it comes down to, in my opinion, is thinking. Paying attention to it, like you said, and then processing it a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. expanding one's awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then processing it a little bit more. Just running it through your brain a few times, going, okay, what's the reason for this? And I know we've all done that a few times here.
We have so few minutes left.
I know. I want to talk about vampires.
That's right. What I want to talk about.
Stepping in on vampires.
Yeah, we only have minutes left. But, yeah, one of your favorite things is vampires. And we left you 10 minutes. Sorry about that. But we got really sidetracked there. But
I'll have to come back for another show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh, yeah. But what got you interested in vampires? Why is that? Like, for example, we've talked with Catherine Ramsland,
mm-hmm.
right? She did the vampire book where she, you know, like, hung out with them.
Yes.
You know, so we know what happened with her. What about Rosemary Ellen Guiley? Why are vampires so important to you?
First of all, vampires are real. And they exist. And they are present today, but our ideas about vampires are not what vampires really are. We get popular ideas about vampires from film and fiction, and those creatures like Lestat walking around or even Dracula walking around, those aren't the real vampires.
No.
The real vampires do exist. I got interested in vampires like a lot of people. I read Dracula when I was a teenager, and it hooked me.
Mm-hmm.
This creature is so fascinating, so it's like a moth being a moth to a flame, and you're so compelled to want to know more about it, but it's fearful, it's terrifying, it's beyond imagination. Film and fiction have nearly wrecked the vampire by making them increasingly glamorous. They're now endowed with incredible looks, fabulous amounts of money, incredible superpowers, and living almost like Superman in the world,
mm-hmm.
And romantic heroes. Actually, the vampire is a terrifying negative entity. It's demonic. It's the restless dead. It's malevolent. There's really nothing good about the vampire.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
I think that it's that aspect of the vampire that continues to fascinate us. Fear of death, fear of the grave is embodied in the vampire. But the folklore about vampires is fascinating. It's worldwide. It goes back to ancient times. There are common traits that we find around the world about what I would call vampire-like entities. And essentially, the vampire is an entity, whether it's a dead person or a demonic kind of spirit, that sucks off the vital life force from the living, takes something away from life itself. It could be the life force through the blood. It could be your energy, your time, your health, your wealth, your crops, your love. There are stories in folklore of vampires who were very feared because they did things like they took the leavening out of bread so that when the women baked bread, the sustenance of daily life, it wouldn't rise, or they made bees stop making honey, or they made cows stop giving milk. They stole the life force.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a vampire does.
So they don't, like, make you fall in love with them and then go and bite your neck when you're making out with them in the back room of some... I mean, no, there is that...
In somebody's multiverse, they do.
Maybe, yeah. Well, that's what you commented on a second ago. There is this element, and I've noticed. I mean, there's been a few vampire movies that have come out over the last maybe 5-6 years.
Yeah, the celluloid multiverse.
Well, yes.
You know,
right.
when you transfer all your ideas onto film,
yeah.
That's how they appear.
Well, yeah, and they're all, like, very, very, very handsome. And they're very, yeah, they're very rich.
Yeah.
And there's this element, Bela Lugosi, he's the one that originated this romantic, handsome vampire that came down the stairs so prolifically with those come-hither eyes at the female. And what you're talking about, it gave the vampire this idea, this aura of, like, sexualism and all these beautiful things. Where, I mean, if you want to talk about films, I have it on DVD here, as a matter of fact. My favorite vampire film, if you want to depict it, is Nosferatu.
That's mine, too, because that creature in Nosferatu comes what I think is the closest to a real vampire.
Yeah.
He's unearthly.
He's ugly.
Max Schreck.
Mm-hmm.
He's pale. He's not quite human. His thin, ghostly wraith of a thing with
mm-hmm.
the rat fangs and the claws.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing human about him, but he's got a human-like appearance, and that really embodies more of the true essence of the vampire than Bela Lugosi or any of the handsome fellows who have played Dracula, like Frank Langella and Tom Cruise's Vampire Lestat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always thought, and that's what I've learned, too, about vampires, was just that, is that the vampire is not this handsome with a cape, you know, coming down the stairs, like I said. He's a very ugly creature. He's a negative creature. He's a scary creature.
There's no moral consciousness in a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Anne Rice hand-wringing, teeth-gnashing over me being evil as a vampire sort of inner debate or debate with God sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist. The vampire has no moral consciousness. The vampire is a negative entity who's directed to suck off your life, I mean, whose purpose is to suck off the life force
mm-hmm.
as a way of energizing itself.
And this is how, I mean, that's how they sustain life, is that they just take energy, and this is in all forms, though, too. Like, that's one thing I've always tried to clarify, is that it isn't just blood. Blood.
No.
It's not blood. You know, it's
not just blood.
It's energy. It's your life force. It could be just like, I can't get out of bed today. Why? What's wrong with me? Right? And you made some other, you coined some other good examples. I never heard of that before, such as milk from cows.
Your ability to sustain yourself.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's it. It's your ability to prosper, to have vitality, to have life. Now, the vampire who's the returning dead is... The dead have traditionally, throughout history, been considered to be jealous of the living. They're dead, they're living in a shadow world or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they want what living people have. And they somehow are able to leave the grave and come back and pester the living
mm-hmm.
for those things that they don't have. Sexual molestation is a hallmark of vampirism, the incubus, succubus kind of attack. They cause nightmares. They cause poltergeist disturbances.
Mm-hmm.
The vampire really is kind of a compilation of other entities. And then there's the demonic vampire, which would be the non-human entity, but entities that exist in the spirit world who are malevolent
mm-hmm.
and do the same kind of attack, you know, that's how they sustain themselves in the spirit world, is to take what you have that is life,
mm-hmm.
an aspect of life, a component of it.
Mm-hmm. It's a very scary thing. I mean, is there any way, and this may be way out there in left field, Rosemary, but you say these creatures are very real.
Mm-hmm.
They're real creatures. Are there any way, I mean, how do we know if we, like, we're walking at the, we're at the mall one day walking around, and how do we, well, you said they're very demonic, though, and they're not human-like. I don't think you'll see one walking into, like, JCPenney or something like that. Is there any way to tell, though? I mean, if you run into one of these things, how do you handle this? What can you do? What's the real approach to it?
I think that most people have a lot of natural protection around them, and we're not going to be vulnerable to being plagued by entities. that are going to fool with us. Now, there are some people who would disagree with that, and spirit releasers are some of them. They think we've got entities on us like fleas on dogs. I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, a vampiric entity is going to make itself known to us in a haunting situation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hauntings have the characteristics of vampire-like presences when they create poltergeist disturbances, nightmare situations, sexual molestation during sleep,
and
people feeling drained, their health affected, their well-being being affected.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are dealing, regardless of whether or not it's a ghost of a dead person or something that's penetrated from the spirit realm, you're dealing with a vampire-like entity because it's sucking off what's good in life.
Mm.
So I think we could classify probably a fair number of hauntings that way. People tend not to think of that because we've associated the vampire with literally a walking corpse that bites people for blood.
Mm.
And that's a very small aspect of vampirism.
Yeah, it's not quite that simple, unfortunately. There's a lot more to it, it sounds.
But there's not much more to the show.
Oh, man.
Because we've got seconds left,
oh, no.
Literally.
Rosemary, thank you so much for coming on the show, though. We really appreciate
it. Great. Well, we'll do vampires in more depth another time.
Please,
I hope
we'd
so.
We'd love to. We'd love
we
to.
We have to.
Sorry we couldn't get to it as much as we hoped to tonight.
Well, it's because we got on the dream.
A lot of ground.
We did.
We got
did.
On the dreams, and then the ghost story thing that I wanted to talk about, and then just everything else. It just, like, culminated into everything else, and then 10 minutes of vampires. So I apologize for that, Rosemary, but
we'll do it again.
But that just means there's got to be something else, something going on next time. Yeah,
part two of Rosemary Ellen Guiley on the show. Rosemary, hang on the line. We're going to close the show out. Okay.
Okay.
Hang tight.
We'll be just one moment. I want to thank Rosemary Ellen Guiley for coming on Ghostly Talk and talking about all those incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank for Lupinia called in,
Keith called in.
Keith called in, and
Newsfield reporter,
and 8-Bit called in briefly.
Yeah,
so thanks for all of that earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, every listener, for listening.
Yeah.
Whether you're listening on a podcast, whether you're listening, live, whether you're listening on Omnisound or Pioneer or any of that. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah,
you're
totally.
Making the show what it is today.
We appreciate that,
and I appreciate it. We are Ghostly Talk, and we are broadcast live on Sunday nights from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Pioneer Radio Network, pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O.net. Also, on Omnisound Radio 1 at omnisoundradio1.net. Our own website is www.ghostlytalk.com, and our illustrious guest, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, she has a permanent link now on our homepage. So if you go to our homepage, you can click up and link up to Rosemary's website.
That sounded really official, dude.
I know. It just came out. I couldn't.
That was
help
nice.
It.
No, we should like record that at the end of every show, and we'll just play that from
I'll
now.
I'll practice for the next time. You guys, thank you so much. We'll be back next Sunday with more.
Yeah, we're out of here. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And this was Ghostly Talk. Peace, y'all.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
I need to go someplace where a man can think. Yeah.